Chapter 11, Witch Boy. While he washed himself, Charlie looked around him. Old Jerusha Bent certainly didn't live elegantly, except that it had a shingle roof. Her cabin wasn't much better than the one he'd shared with Silas and the others in Culpeper. Like it, hers had a big fireplace with kettles and iron pots at one end and a window at the other. There wasn't much furniture, just a wooden table, two split-bottom chairs, nails to hang clothing on, a spinning wheel, and a bed. The kitchen he'd seen as he came in was just a lean-to off the back porch. At the top of one wall was a loft with a ladder positioned against it, and in the dim light he could just make out a number of brown, green, and yellow bottles with dark-colored twigs and bark in them on the mantel. With the old woman gone to the lean-to to fix him something to eat, Charlie went hopefully to the front door and then to the window, wondering if he could escape through them. The door was barred high up, too high for him to reach, and the window was nailed shut. No, he couldn't get away, not right now anyway. His face and hands dried, Charlie sat down at the table to wait. He truly was hungry. He'd eat, and then he'd plot his escape. If he'd gotten through the wilderness unseen, he ought to be able to get through these wooden hills, too. Granny Bent brought him a plate of eggs, bacon, and cornbread. With it came what was meant to be coffee. She sighed as she gave it to him. "This is parched corn. You Yankees got all the real coffee, don't you?" Before Charlie could answer, she went on. "I better tell you, there's more than just Confederate deserters out about. There's bandits here, too. Men that don't care for no army, north or south. Everything that's on the run heads for the mountains. They'd rob you and shoot you. You seen that there's no getting out of my house by the door or winder? The good Lord sent you here, I'd say, to preserve you." Listening to this, Charlie choked on a bite of cornbread. She had truly read his mind. Bandits, too? These mountains were dangerous, maybe more dangerous than going north of the wilderness would have been. She pointed to the loft. "Up there, that's where young'uns old enough to climb the ladder sleep." Charlie nodded. Though he knew once he was up there, all she had to do was take the ladder away to hold him prisoner. The old woman said, "There's shucked corn and dried gourds up there. Don't you lay in 'em. You'll find old quilts there." As Charlie finished his food, the woman continued. "I don't let my chickens run wild like most folks do here, when they got chickens at all. That way I can always lay my hands on an egg, not go hunting for 'em. I go to bed when they do and get up with 'em." Charlie asked, "If I have to stay here, what'll you want me to do?" "Plant and hoe and weed and tote water. Help me hunt for yarbs in the woods and help me with the yarbs." "Yarbs?" "Sassafras and sarsaparilla and boneset and others. Don't you know what yarbs are?" Charlie thought hard on the word sarsaparilla. It was a drink he knew. Someone had once told him it was made from an herb. He asked, "Are those herbs?" "Yarbs, that's what they are. Aren't there any where you come from?" "No, ma'am, not that I know of." "Y'all learn 'em here, then. I do doctoring with 'em. Give 'em that round water thing you're totin'. Give me that round water thing you're totin'." Charlie nodded as he gave up the canteen and drank the bitter parched corn coffee. Oh, but he was tired from the uphill walking he'd done that day. The strangeness of the cabin and the old woman wearied him, too. Though he'd be a prisoner, he looked forward to sleeping in the loft. He asked, "Will I go doctoring with you? Not when I take out Canaan and go to Berthin's, bringing babies as women's work." The boy asked, "Who's Canaan?" "My mule. That's a Bible name. Can you read the Bible, boy?" "Yes, ma'am." She sighed. "Ain't you the fortunate one? If I had a Bible, you could read it to me nights, because I can't. I'd like you to read to me from it. It's the Holy Ghost in it. Are you a Churchly boy?" "Churchly." Did that mean what he thought it meant? Charlie said, "I went to Mass sometimes with my sister." "Mass? I heard of that when I lived below in the bluegrass country. That's church going for Catholics, ain't it?" "Yes, ma'am." Her eyes widened. "Lord above, I got me a red-headed Catholic Yankee deserter boy here. No matter, it's the same God above that we both got, ain't it?" "I guess so." Charlie ducked his head. She called herself a witch, and yet she was talking about churches. She couldn't truly be a witch and be religious, too, could she? That night, despite his weariness, Charlie lay wide awake for a long time in the loft. Clear enough, he was a captive of this big old woman who talked and acted so strangely. On one hand, he wanted to escape from her and cross the mountains, but what if she had told him the truth about the bandits and the mountaineers shooting strangers? It could be true. If it was, maybe he'd be better off with her even though he didn't know one thing about farm work. But then, he hadn't known about drumming either, and he'd learned. One thing was certain. He better keep quiet here in the hills so mountain people wouldn't know he was an outlander, as she named it, and a Yankee to boot. Well, at least she knew how to feed a hungry boy. Her 7 eggs and a big piece of cornbread had tasted good and filled him to the top. Now Charlie sat upright. By Jiminy, she hadn't said one word about paying for him for his work. Should he ask her tomorrow morning? He frowned. No, he'd better not. That could make her angry again. The next morning, Charlie found out that what he was to do. He had to plant corn, and fast, because Granny Bent's rheumatic back and shoulders told her rain was coming soon. Already it was 2 weeks after the new moon, the right time to be planting corn. She showed Charlie the spot off ground, the spot of ground that began level, then rose up onto the hill behind her cabin. All you gotta do, boy, is make a hole in the ground between the rocks, drop in a seed, and cover it up. For now the sun and the rain will do the rest. Then later on you cull the weeds out of the corn. The field's a mite steep and goes uphill a ways, but not so bad. You'll have to weed standing up like in some fields around here. Later on, you'll plant cabbages. Have you ever done any plant before? No, I never did. I reckon you had to buy everything you ate wherever you come from. Yes, ma'am, we have to. We haven't got any land to grow things on. We live upstairs in a big brown house. Do tell. Her eyes glowed with interest. Don't you live downstairs too, then? Charlie shook his head. Somebody else lives there, and somebody else lives up over us. Jerusha Bent muttered, "Why, you be stacked like cordwood. How can you get your breath so close? Speaking of cordwood, can you chop wood?" "No, I never did that either. We used to buy our wood and coal." "Why, you must buy just about everything, then." "I guess so, ma'am." Charlie wasn't looking at her, but at a patch of flat ground over at the right edge of her property, up against her fence. He pointed to it and said, "It's flatter over there. Wouldn't that be a better place than here for planting things?" "That's my graveyard." "Oh," Charlie stopped, confused. There weren't any tall, white marble angels here. In fact, there weren't any headstones at all that he could see. She went on, "God gave me 5 young'uns and took 'em all back before they was full growed. That was a long time back since me and Isaac laid 'em all to rest." She sighed deeply. "Isaac?" asked Charlie. "My man, Isaac Bent," she gestured. "He ain't over there, though. He laid to rest down near Franklin." "Where's that?" "Don't you know? You must have walked through it getting up here. I didn't know the names of the places I saw." "No matter. Isaac dug the well and built the cabin for him and me, and we lived here for a long time. Then we went down to Franklin, where he done carpentering, and I learned how to understand what outlanders were saying. That's how come I can understand what you say so easy." She paused to look up at the pale gray sky. Paler gray mist lay high on the hills. "I never took to Franklin. With so many folks around all the time, it seemed I couldn't breathe. So I came back here with the Canaans, and I don't find breathing hard no more." Charlie looked at her, thinking of the hamlets he'd gone through the previous day. Why, they couldn't have had more than 200 people in any of them. If she felt crowded here, what would she think of New York City and the Bowery? He felt he didn't breathe as well here as he had there. The mountains loomed over him, threatening him. He asked, "Don't you ever go to town at all?" "Once a month or so, I take yarbs down to Herne Hollow and trade 'em for coal oil." "Could your husband make a living at carpentry up here on the hills before you went to Franklin?" From what he'd seen, no other farms in the distance, and no smoke rising anywhere, Isaac Bent couldn't have had many buyers for his work. Isaac had other work to do. "Now don't ask me no more questions." "Work to do? Besides carpeting? More mystery." Charlie wanted to grin, but dared not. For sure, Granny Bent's husband must have been a whiskey maker. He'd heard talk in Culpeper Camp of how the mountain men made liquor on the sly because they refused to pay any government, Confederate or North, the tax they were supposed to pay on every gallon. They made it in secret and sold it in secret. Had Isaac Bent made liquor and then gone to Franklin to sell it? As if she'd read his mind, the old woman said suddenly, "My Isaac never made squirrelhead whiskey in his life. Him and me, we left here because of them McRae's. There was 6 of 'em and just 2 Bents, Isaac and his old pa. McRae's and Bent's never did get on well together. Sometimes they were shooting. Just before we left, they was taking pot shots at us night and day." Charlie felt the hairs on his neck prickle. These mountaineers were dangerous. Not looking at her, he asked, "Are there still McRae's and Bent's around?" "Like I told you, there used to be a whole passel of McRae's, but the only ones passed on and the young'uns went to war. The old ones passed on and the young'uns went to war. There's a boy your age now. Coy's, that's all. I'm the last of the Bent's. They don't mess with me, though, because they think I'm a witch woman. They could have need of me, and they know it. They could have need of me, and they know it. There ain't a doctor for 100 miles up or down here. Nobody knows no more how the whole ruction started. If Coy McRae spies you, you might have to fight him. Do you fight at all, boy? Charlie boasted. I'm a good fighter, ma'am. But you ran away and deserted from your army. Charlie's face flamed. That was different. She said sharply, I can see that it was, to ya. Get on with my planting, boy. Tie the seed corn to your belt so you can reach for it. And she went back to the cabin. The rest of that day, Charlie worked hard planting corn and ate what Granny brought to him in the field. He soon decided that farm work was not for him. It wasn't only that it was dull, but before long his arms and back ached as he stooped and bent, working in the poor rock-strewn soil. This work made him pine for his good life as a Bowery boy. Why had he run away? He'd been stupid. He saw that now. That night, with the corn planted and a soft rain falling outside the cabin, Charlie answered Granny Ben's questions about New York City as best he could. He told her about the traffic on Broadway and amusements about town and in the Bowery. Her eyes grew wide as she spoke of the railroad that came onto Manhattan Island and of the steamer that had brought him here to Virginia. She had never seen a railroad track nor the sea. She told him she knew of it, though, because mountain singers sang old ballads of England, Scotland, and Ireland, where their ancestors had come from more than a century ago. When she spoke of the idea to dig a road beneath the great city of his birth for trains to run on underground, she said she didn't believe a word of it. Now, for the first time in days, Charlie laughed. It's hard for me to believe, too, ma'am. Leaning back in her chair, she asked him, Are there a lot of black folks where you live? Charlie thought it an odd question, but said, Not many at all. Are there up here? Not none up here, none at all. No more Indians either. My ma was the last Creek to die here, and she was only half Indian. Now it's time for you to go to bed. Tomorrow I'm taking you to Herne Hollow with me so folks get a look at you and spread the news I got you for my boy. Don't talk and don't get out of my sight down there. I'll give you an old jacket I got here to keep you warm on the way. We'll be starting early and it'll be cold. The old woman woke Charlie at daybreak by banging the ladder against the edge of the loft. The rain's over. I got cornbread from last night for you. Canaan's ready to go. Come on, skedaddle boy. His hair combed with his fingers, his eyes heavy with sleep, his face damp from a hasty wash, Charlie set out minutes later with Granny Bent and her black mule. She rode with a basket of yarb bottles in her hand, and Charlie followed on foot. Granny Bent took a trail through laurel thickets that went in another direction from the one that had brought Charlie to her farm. This trail twisted about uphill and down, and finally came to a road that skirted the top of a deep ravine. After a time, it swerved to the left and went downhill. After near 2 hours of travel, they came to a tiny settlement composed of a handful of one-story houses in a pocket in the hills beside a stream. Herne Hollow consisted of a stone gristmill to grind corn, a steepled church made of planks, a store, and two other small unpainted wooden buildings. Two elderly long-bearded men leaned on the store's fence, and three others sat on its porch, each with a hound dog at its feet. Charlie stared at them as he and the old woman came up together. They were lanky men with light eyes and yellowish skins, dressed like Granny Bent was. "Howdy, Jerusha," one called out as he stopped whittling. "Who's that you got with you?" she called back. "A feather-headed chunk of a boy I found wandering in the woods. He don't seem to be able to talk, but he understood's good enough. If he ever gets himself lost, fetch him back to me. He helps me with my corn. How's your daughter's new baby, Amos?" "Keepin' fine, both of 'em, since you saw him last when he was born. What you call the boy?" "Boy does good enough for him. Come along inside now, boy." While Charlie, who disliked being called boy, looked about and sniffed the strong odors of the store, Granny Bent traded her yarbs for kerosene. He heard her tell the man behind the counter, "This bottle's pink root for fevers, that one's spikenard for sore backs, and this one's sassafras," and after that he stopped listening until he heard her ask, "Is there any news about the war?" The store owner, a tall man with a few teeth and a tobacco-stained beard, spat a stream of tobacco juice out the window behind him and said, "Another conscriptor looking for deserters come through here earlier today. He said there's wild fighting going on now in a place called Spotsylvania Courthouse, not far from the wilderness. The wilderness is still burning, if yesterday's rain didn't put it out." The wilderness, pain and shame caught Charlie so sharply he almost cried out. Her business finished, Granny Bent went back outside to her mule. There were now two more people on the porch, an old woman and a boy. They all let Granny pass, but when Charlie, who was carrying the jug of kerosene, came out, the boy stuck out his bare foot to trip him. Charlie saw the foot just in time to escape it by jumping backward. The yellow-headed, yellow-eyed mountain boy, a whole head taller than Charlie, hissed at him. "I'm Coy. I seen you coming along the ridge with the old witch woman, so I come down here fast. They say you're her witch boy. Coy. Coy McRae. What should he do? Charlie asked himself. This was a challenge, one that couldn't be overlooked. He set the jug down carefully and then looked to Granny Bent, who was beside Kanan and watching him. Charlie caught the nod of her head. It was a signal to fight. Fight, she said he might have to be because she was a Bent. It wasn't fair, though. He wasn't a Bent. Well, he supposed this wouldn't be much different from a Bowery boy fighting a dead rabbit back home. Lots of other things up here seemed strange and different, but this he understood. Charlie nodded, then he put up his fist just as he would have done in Chatham Square.